Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 13, continuing from yesterday, text starting with text 18, which is a series of verses with no purports. This is Brahma. Contemplating the message you just received from Swami Bhukumanda when the earth had fallen out of orbit, he turned his attention to the personality of Godhead, and Maitreya is near you this pastime, Lord Brahma's appearance pastime, to Vidura. Oh, sinless Vidura, all of a sudden, while Brahma was engaged in thinking, whose thoughts are yesterday's verse, a small form of a boar came out of his nostril. The measurement of the creature was not more than the upper portion of a thumb. Oh, descendant of Bharata, while Brahma was observing him, that boar became situated in the sky. In a wonderful manifestation, the gigantic and the great elephant, struck with wonder at observing the wonderful boar-like form in the sky, Brahma, with great brahmanas like Marichi, as well as the Kumaras and Manu, began to argue in various ways. And some, is this some extraordinary entity? Comes the presence of a war, pretense of a war. It is very wonderful that he has come from my nose. First of all, this boar was seen no bigger than the tip of a thumb. And within a moment, he was as large as a stone. My mind is perturbed. Is he the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu? Before, since Brahma is the supermost person in the universe, and he had never before experienced such a form, he could guess that the wonderful appearance of the boar was an incarnation of Vishnu, the uncommon feature symptomatic of the incarnation of Godhead. Can bewilder even the mind of Brahma. Text 23. While Brahma was deliberating with his sons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu roared tumultuously like a great mountain. Report. It appears that great hills and mountains also have their roaring power, because they are also living entities. The volume of the sound vibrated is in proportion to the size of the material body. While Brahma was guessing about the appearance of the Lord's incarnation as a boar, the Lord confirmed Brahma's contemplation by roaring with his gorgeous voice. Text 24. The omnipotent Supreme Personality Godhead enlivened Brahma and the other highly elevated Brahmanas by again roaring with his tumultuous, with his uncommon voice which echoed in all directions. Report Brahma. And of the enlightened Brahmanas, who know the Supreme Personality Godhead, are enlivened by the appearance of the Lord in any of his multi-incarnations. the appearance of the wonderful and gigantic incarnation of Vishnu as the mountain-like boar did not fill them with any kind of fear, although the Lord's resounding voice was tumultuous and echoed horribly in all directions as an open threat to all demons who might challenge his omnipotency. We will pause for a bit. On Sunday, we heard Queen Kunti's marveling at this, the mysterious features of the personality of God. Of course, she's addressing Krishna, and we know from Srimad Bhagavatam Krishna's unique position as the source of all incarnations, the source of everything, the absolute truth. And there's mysteries connected with the absolute truth. And we heard he who's unborn becomes born. And although he, Krishna, is in human-like form, which is very pleasing and appropriate for those in human-like forms to identify with and relate and serve, there is other forms of the Lord that are different. And they're fully transcendental also. And so we heard Vishnu saying that it's bewildering in this sense, one of the ways, is he's diminishing his position to an animal. But then, exalted souls, here we have the example of exalted souls, they're not regarding this varaha form as material, a living entity like a or a living entity taking on a form of a boar and being, you know, demeaned by having such an embarrassing form. It's not like that. No, the great souls understand it's not like that. And then there's features of this uncommon form. The nature of his appearance. In a moment he became really big in the sky, and then bigger than that, and like a mountain, that's it. Mountains are big. Okay. Zoom. Quickly. Certainly something mystical. And then the sound of his roar. And there's further descriptions of Lord Varaha and his, so the quality of his voice is not like, it's like that of something that's really big, like the sound of something really big. But it's pleasing in a way that even something that's really big is pleasing. And although that sound was tumultuous in volume, it wasn't fearful. It was sweet and pleasing for him, at least pleasing. Because there's a transcendental nature of everything connected with the absolute truth. Now, the non-devotees don't recognize that. His contact with Hiranyaksha was, he wasn't fearful when Hiranyaksha was thinking, I'm invincible, and here's another mystic entity. Yes, I have mystic powers, and I'll defeat him. Because I'm so powerful. This is demoniac mentality. Because of that demoniac mentality, the person cannot recognize transcendence. transcends it negatively or positively. Transcendence is blocked to understand spiritual reality, the soul, the supreme soul, the relation with the supreme soul, the unique position of devotional service. This is the nature of offensive or demoniac mentality. Everything becomes blocked that yoga maya covers. Nam prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samagata. Krishna speaking, so it's not just in his Krishna form, but any of his forms, one can't recognize. It's just the feature of the external energy, and in contrast, the feature of the internal energy. The devotee, because of devotion, has access to that internal potency. They can see. The potential at least is there to see. But others cannot see, even what they could not see. But as devotion awakens, then one can start to see things that previously one could not see. Or in this case, Brahma and these exalted personalities, Marichi and others, Kumaras, named Manu was named, but they saw also, they heard also. They didn't immediately understand, we heard that in the verses, so they're in unusual way, kind of speculating. Is he this? Is he that? They come to know. They come to know by dint of disclosure by the personality of God, not just by, yes, by his uncommon features. Even the, you know, the, this is right, the eyes of Lord Brahma were so charming. Now who thinks of the eyes of the boar as being charming? Probably when you get past, you know, the feature of the boar to take a look at the eyes of the boar and see, are they charming? Look at that little features, even of Brahma. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is describing, becomes a delight. Even the mystery becomes a delight. Keeping it in really simple terms. One of the those who became followers of Srila Prabhupada were in the mood, like many people who are new at something, to leave behind the material entanglement. There's an extreme and artificial kind of renunciation. Common. Not just in the early days, but it's common. If someone starts the process of devotional service and they say, you know, I don't have any interest in going to work anymore. I don't have any interest in doing my studies at school. I don't have any interest in anything that's of this world. I lost interest. It's a very, from my experience in having to give guidance to people that are starting bhakti, it's a common thing. It's not just for this age or this group of people. It's not always like that, but it's common. Extreme renunciation. And it's part of what the fear of people that know what spirituality looks like is they become really nervous when a family member, or to speak of their son or daughter, starts to take real serious interest in Krishna consciousness. Oh, no. it will take sannyas. Because that's the common karma sannyas. You gotta be spiritual, you have to do karma sannyas, you have to give up everything. It's quite immature. And becoming more mature is not like finding a nice healthy balance of attachment to detachment. That the mature position is to understand that everything belongs to Krishna and engage everything in service to Krishna. Anyway, in the early days, one of the devotees asked Prabhupada, is it okay to appreciate the beauty of sunset in the evening, or a rose and its fragrance and the beauty of a rose, because there was so much poetry about such things. You know, persons in the mode of goodness appreciating the rose. There's one famous poem, The Rose, it's a rose. And, you know, you have to compare something to something that's very wonderful, and the rose is so special you can't compare it to anything that's so special. So Prabhupada's answer was, yes, you appreciate the sunset or the beauty and the fragrance of the rose and think, how wonderful is my Krishna? That is to say, behind everything, wonderful, there's Krishna. So what to speak of when this form of Brahma comes, they've never seen anything like. But deductively, and then by quality, it's demonstrated. He's the Supreme Personality of God. It's not just a mystic or some kind of powerful entity. We heard the verse, Brahma is contemplating how amazing that this form came from my nostril. And it's quite basic. I mean, what a way to make an appearance on stage, up through the nostril of Brahma. My goodness. Born from the nostril. That's really creative. Now, who can say if each of the appearances of Brahma, that's the method it uses for appearing? We don't know the answer to that question, but we know that there's more than one Brahma. We heard that already yesterday. Red Brahma, white Brahma. And there's variation in the pastimes also. Steve, I'll spend a little bit of time on that topic. Variation on the pastimes. Yes, you know, even besides the color, white and red. A really nice, like, transcendentally wonderful description of this is found in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where there's this narration of Krishna's encounter with Kesha. Now we have the Bhagavatam's Krishna's encounter with Kesha, Kesha demon. And, you know, he comes in and sent by Kamsa. He's, you know, a terrorist. He terrorizes everybody and he does make a loud sound with his giant body. And everyone's, oh, how terrible. So, Krishna challenges him and Keshi charges at him. Krishna ducks out of the way. And he goes charging and collapses. And then Krishna. So finally, very expertly, what the Prabhupada narrates is the horse is controlled by his tongue. So when the horse is tamed, there's a bit or piece of something metal in the mouth of the horse, and because that's really sensitive, when you pull on this rein or you pull on that rein, it means left and right, because you control them that way. And after some time, the command of, I learned this from Prasanna Swami, deed and hawk. I mean, I don't know what those words mean. That a horse comes to know. This one, D, means whatever, left. The ha means right, because he pulls and says D. So after some time, he doesn't even have to pull the reins. He just says D and ha. You're like, okay. Gets carried out, turned out to turn right, just through sound. Of course, I was trying to tell him that he had trained up some horses. Maybe it was oxen, or one or the other. They found a field, and he was outside the field. He was just calling, you know, Vietnam. I don't know, you know, do a U-turn, just some command for that one. From the practice and practice and practice and practice and practice, and it just became through sound, he was able to control. Anyway, starts with the tongue, or the horse, different creatures, different senses. So Krishna knew, he created horses, so he knows how to control the horse. So he put his fist in the mouth, and his fist got bigger and bigger, and it was hot, like molten iron. And it was burning. In case you wanted to spit it out, he couldn't, because Krishna's fist got really big. And he died. Just... But Bhagavatamrita describes a different conclusion, because there's a different case at different times. It's the same theme, but Krishna tamed Keshi, and Krishna kept Keshi in the corral. So from time to time, the cavalry boys would come and ride Keshi ahead. Yes, I'm riding Keshi. And then the explanation is, there is variegatedness in the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, because variety is the mother of enjoyment. In the pastimes, Krishna's enjoyment. So we're not told the differences between the red and the white Varaha. We're only told that Jiva Goswami says he's combining these two narrations. Which means, at least, you know, besides color, there's some variegatedness in those pastimes of Varaha's appearance. But one thing that we can assume is this loud sound, tumultuous roaring, echoing in the sky. And what was the purpose of it? Well, multiple purposes. One is so that the pure devotees know the pleasing sound of his roaring tumultuous voice, which didn't make them fearful, because they knew, like Prahlad knew, that the the features exhibited by Nrisimhadev were meant for the demons. Prahlad is not afraid, because that roaring sound and the gnashing of the teeth, and that's for the demons. And so he was undisturbed and unafraid. So the demigods, great sages and Brahma, they were not fearful. But another purpose of Lord Brahma was to warn demons. Or whatever the sound was. Tumultuous sound. Because he had appeared, Prithunaya Satanam, Vinashaya Shadustritam. He appeared to uplift the earth, but the reason the earth had fell out of its orbit, or had fallen out of its orbit, was Hiranyaksha, so was appearing to deal with Hiranyaksha. So the tumultuous roar was for him, and others like him. And is it, so, is it like a scare tactic, or what is it? It's ये काम प्रपद्यन्ते काम से धाइवा पजामि हम. Because there are persons who regard him in an inimical fashion, he reciprocates with their regard for him. You see me in an inimical fashion, you wish, you see me as enemy, fantastic, loving enemy. You see me as your dear most worshipful, fantastic, I'll appear before you as your dear most worshipful. And, what we heard Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say on Sunday, the commentary, is he sniffed out, because that's part of what the apparatus of a born is, they have a tongue, excuse me, a nose that's very sensitive. And they, with their nose, they ferret here and there to find something yummy, like stool. So, through his capacity of smell and his capacity of the tusks, the boar with tusks. As far as I've seen, the boars without tusks, and there's boars with tusks, different species and varieties. So he appeared as a boar to go into the, and I don't know why it's called a filthy place. You know, the garment of ocean is a filthy place, not meant to be. It's the perspiration from the body of Lord Vishnu is sacred. But anyway, this mind is at the bottom, even below the hellish planets, because the hellish planets start above that ocean. But in any case, it's from an impure, unclean place, so he came as a boar to go to that place, used his tusks, used his sniffing, just appropriate for the occasion. So he assumed a form appropriate for the occasion, or the circumstance. Accurate judge of time, place, and circumstance. Personality. He creates a circumstance that he knows how to deal with the circumstance that he creates. So he delivered the earth, and delivered Hiranyaksha, and amazed the devotees. They felt very uplifted and pleased that they have been protected. The earth has been protected. The demigods oversee the well-being of the universe. The Lord has saved us. Doesn't mean like, okay, now we don't have to do any service, but still take care of everything. They have their service. And when the service becomes disturbed by the consent of the Supreme Lord, the demoniac Hiranyaksha did what he did. So, in certain circumstances, the Lord's intervention is required. Directly, not just through his devotee. Of course he could do something wonderful through his devotee too. But the Lord protects him, is always there, and therefore there's no fear. Say negatively. There's fear when one doesn't understand there's protection of the Supreme Lord. And as a result, when it is identified with the temporary body and the temporary circumstances and trying to address it on your own, it's overwhelming. Illusion is overwhelming. Even if it looks nice, it's still overwhelming. Even if it's not nice or negative, it's overwhelming. So the Bhagavatam is there to help us become like these great souls that hear this see this amazing feature of the Lord, the glory form, etc. And they're very pleased. And reciprocates. He's doing this to reciprocate with them. They can understand because of their devotion. And Hiranyaksha can't because of his demoniac mentality. Let's see if there's some discussion. When you let me hear this question.
Yes, I did this last time. A thought has been coming to me often that the reason the earth has fallen down is because of so much exploitation and the earth fell down. So now, right now, how we are exploiting all the resources of the earth.
It's risky.
It's risky. So I was wondering, but in the scriptures, it's not given that the earth may fall down again. So will it happen that Mother Earth is going to withdraw all the resources? What I'm just contemplating. What is the possibility?
Well, anything possible, but we don't hear anything from scripture indicating that. In this case, specifically, Prabhupada describes, Hiranyaksha created a tunnel all the way through the earth, and on the other side of the earth, he was gathering gold. If you can create a tunnel through the earth, you can get a large quantity of gold from somewhere, and that large quantity of gold is what caused the imbalance in the earth. So the balance was gone. So this isn't Satya Yuga, where people have the capacity to disturb the balance of resources or raw materials from the earth to that degree. They just Trump's explanation about construction is you just take from here and put it over there. And now there's all these big buildings. It's just taking some earth. So your question is, by doing that, taking the earth putting over there, is it going to result in the earth falling out of orbit? It's not going to be some other side of the planet when the high-rise buildings are made. Whatever the materials are, stone and cement and steel. It's not. Marble is taken from different parts of the world and taken long distances to get to there. Destination. But generally not earth, making cement, asphalt, bricks. So, not so likely. There's no indication from scripture, and it's not so likely, because these are small beings compared to a big being. Yes, they're disturbing the balance of the earth, but not to that degree. Not likely. Nor is there indication of scripture. That's an answer. It is. Yes.
Maharaj, I have a question from yesterday's class about being perplexed.
Being perplexed. Mm-hmm.
I play many different roles of mother and wife and daughter and daughter-in-law.
And employee.
And employee.
And member of the community.
Right. So sometimes.
Student and teacher.
Right. Homeless. Homeless. So sometimes, there may be a situation where you have your prescribed duties as all those roles, and then there are services that has to be done. So, sometimes I don't know what to do, because I want to do this, and I want to do that, and I want to do both. But time constraints and limited capacities and resources, things like that.
Yeah.
So what's, how to, and everything works on a mental platform, how you were saying, you keep on saying back and forth.
Well, we choose from the platform of the mind, accepting, rejecting, some call it conflict. Intelligence needs to drive the function of the mind. If there's material intelligence, it's on the platform of enjoyment And spiritual intelligence is on the platform of Krishna's enjoyment. Now, so, and just commenting on the platform of mind. There's different answers to your question. One answer is time management. But, you know, the experience says we're limited. That's reality. We're limited, and so we can't do all that we want to do. So how do you prioritize when there's two things you want to do and two things that need to be done? And as far as you can see, there isn't time to do them. Well, what do you do? You have to choose something, we just be paralyzed or immobilized, not able to do anything because you're too caught up in a little bit like Chandra's question yesterday. I get lost in trying to sort out between this and that, and neither of them are happening, and you know what, how do I handle that? What to speak of, say, in your case, your health is, as far as I know, reasonably good. And then there's people that their health is not so reasonably good. And there's different factors that we, so, that's just part of the limitation, besides time management. It's important to be able to communicate to others who are maybe expecting you to perform some duty, whether it's children or husband or job or the other functions and roles that you play. That, you know, my intention doesn't match in this case or for this period of time. That my limitations. So, let's consider together a way that this need, because it's a need, and recognize the need to manage carrying on with it. So, it's, you know, working in a collaborative way with other persons who are affected by something that's needed. I'm sure that goes on in the home. Periodically, not regularly, things that are, that husband is expecting, or children are expecting, or something, or something, and working on it, and the various roles. Getting an anxiety about it makes it worse. One becomes less capable and less discerning and less, you know, decisive. Weaker in the time management because of being overwhelmed or feeling that it's a negative emotion of one kind or another, I'm a failure or not good enough or stress. It debilitates everything. So that's a caution is to, you know, be aware of that. Don't go there. Try to not go there. And, you know, you may, one of the options is you just diminish the things that you yourself will recognize you're able to do. You just don't take on roles and services beyond what's realistic. At work or in home or in community or, so, something that establishes that confidence in your self-worth is, you know, the big rock that's solid, comes first. So that doesn't get compromised. You may be able to do less, you may be able to do more, depending upon the period of time with the family or with work or with circumstances. Generosity Bhavan appears to be and must be coming up with a husband. So, be mindful about limitations before you say yes to that very important that you really like. That was the thing you like to do, you want to do. We're going to see tonight this pyramid chart of needs. And everything, the different needs need to be aligned with the compost. And we're not always going to get it right, the alignment principle. But that's the corrective measure, finally, is the alignment principle. Aligning everything with the source of everything. And I'm not always going to get it right, and that's okay. But I'll refine and refine and refine to align with that, which is at the top of the pyramid, pleasing Krishna. And then other needs that go down the pyramid, aligning all of them. So it gets, a big part is time management, a big part of time management is priorities, and part of priorities is making nice and good decisions. And you can put it all together in question. And just accept there's some things that are, I like to do and needs to be fulfilled that for myself and for others it just can't always be met. You need to communicate accordingly. And a final comment to the next question. This is just very practical. My experience is that capacity to do things comes from Krishna, and the more you're aligned with Krishna, the more you have capacity to do things. People that are really busy have some empowerment from Krishna to achieve what they're able to achieve. That power comes from Krishna. Now some people don't recognize that and they think it's due to piety or something, to their cleverness or something. But ultimately Krishna is the source of the devotees. It's just, that doesn't get compromised because that's the source of my ability to do things effectively, efficiently, and so resting upon core Krishna consciousness, that's resting upon core Krishna conscious activity. You are hearing and chanting and worshiping, etc. No, beware of the urgency need eclipsing where the source of strength is coming from. It's a diseased condition of life, and it goes further and further once the disease starts to change. Anything else? Do you have something?
As we are going through the different kinds of incarnations in this third chapter of Ashtanga.
Third chapter, first chapter.
Yeah, the Purushakaras and the appearance as saviors, and then with the Varahakara and the Kapila, Saint Kapila, like that. Is being counted in that chapter. But when I was reading 10th canto, Krishna liberating Mukunda, when Krishna coming to Mukunda, and Mukunda, to Mukunda, Krishna says, I have taken thousands of births,
live thousands of lives, and accepted thousands of names. And even I cannot count that Christmas. And in the next verse he says, you might count the particles of dust, but you cannot count the names and the words and the, like that. That is very, very beautiful. How many incarnations?
How many?
How many thousands?
That's your question?
Yeah.
That's your question?
And could you comment on that one? That there are so many incarnations.
Well, you've answered your question. Even Krishna can't count. Do you want me to count?
It looks like Bhagavatam has only so many.
Well, it's a synopsis. It's not everything. If I could, I forget the number, but the Bhagavatam in the heavenly planets, ours is 18,000, and the Bhagavatam is some large number, much larger number, I forget the number. But so this is a synopsis and that's an expansion version, but what's the limit? You have the answer. Even Krishna doesn't know the limit. But it's very similar to Ananta Shesha, because he's Ananta. And through his mouth he's chanting the glories and he can't find the answer chanting the words. So, that part of the inconceivableness, the chinta quality of the source of everything. How's that? You're happy?
Yes.
Okay. It's nice to see that you're reading Bhagavatam. Source of inspiration.
Maharaj, every day she reads to the Lord Shiva's after arti, every single day.
And the Pandit Prabhu gave me that role 3 years ago. So,
how much time do you spend doing that every day?
About 45 minutes.
You'll become very dear to them.
She's already in the 11th
Well,
the numerical nature of what you're doing is wonderful, but most wonderful is before the personality Godhead, he will hold you very carefully. And how that will take a shape, who can say, that is, unquestionable fact. Unquestionable fact. So that's maybe a nice place to end for this morning. Srila Prabhupada, please.